Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Y'all get the guns, the drugs, from my generation, I'll take the fall. The state, and across the nation, and it's a state. The guns, the fake, the fraud, the measure with me. Come on, come on, come on, let's get it out.
That'll be quite enough of that. Want to give you a little time to do it. Good evening, everybody, and welcome into the May 28th edition of the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Apologies for not being with you last week. Our personal lives happened to get in the way. However, we are back with you, in my case, for the first time in 3 weeks. In their case, for the first time in two, my co-host, the down since day one, Tony Acero.
What up, bitches?
And the new third man, Andrew Bowers.
Yo.
I missed you guys.
I know. You guys, hold on. Before we start the show, I don't know how closely you've been following wrestling news, but there are two rap songs that were released within the last few days.
Oh, God.
One that came out just hours ago, and I had the lovely privilege bestowed upon me by Larry to review both tracks and post at 411mania.com. So expect that to be up shortly. As your hip-hop guru and man of, you know, many lyrically talented talents, I felt like I was the right man to do it. And Enzo, I think the indies would have been a slightly better place for you.
Tony, privilege seems like the wrong word here, brother. I actually listened to one of the tracks that you're referring to, and Jesus, he thinks he's Little John.
He's little.
How you been, Andrew?
I contend it's better than the mumble rap crap.
Yeah, well, Leo Rush decided to go the mumble rap route. Excessive Auto-Tune was his tag team partner, apparently. And Enzo just went, it was like Randy Savage on speed. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
I know, I listened to that one. I wasn't going to listen to anything Leo Rush because I thought he was overrated since his ROH days, and he's done nothing but screw up in WWE, so... nothing about him interests me. But the Enzo thing, it's better than mumble rap. Lyrical content was interesting. Did he burn bridges? Sure. Is he pissed off and petty?
Sure.
Yes. But, you know, it was still interesting.
Admittedly, I think interesting is a good enough word. I mean, I feel like Enzo lyrically was like, you know what? He could probably do this. But then, like, many of his promos... he has an idea, and then he just stretches it way too long, and you get lost in the metaphor, and it's just not succinct enough. And that was, I mean, if I'm reviewing the song literally without joking, without being an asshole, from a rap, you know, from a rap fan's point of view, you can't stretch something that long without losing your audience, and that's basically what this song did.
Well, there wasn't enough metaphor in that either, especially with the whole... what bridge the chorus was, you can suck my consensual dick or something like that. I'm like, really? You're not going to put a little bit of gray in there for us to even think or imagine what you might be referring to? No, we're just going to spell it out in purple crayon. Fucking awesome.
Consensual penis. That's a t-shirt.
I'm not Bill Cosby, bitch. I think I did that about as much justice as I could there. I will take Be a Man Hulk over this any day of the week and twice on Sundays. Don't be scared. He's running from the match. That's what I heard. Anywho, to the reason we're actually here, the Memorial Day edition of Monday Night Raw, and apparently the WWE doesn't know fuck all about U.S. holidays, because this is the day we honor the fallen, not the living, you morons.
Wait, you're trying to tell me that's what the word memorial means?
Yeah, well, apparently they don't know that, specifically Bobby Lashley. And we'll get to that goddamn disaster of a segment here soon.
I mean, Bobby Lashley is a walking disaster. That should be his new gimmick.
At least since he's returned to the Fed, he has been. But let's start at the top with Braun. It's been a while since I've done that. I need to get my.
It
like,
sounded like you needed to get that out for a couple weeks. You okay? Do you want to talk about anything? It's a safe space, buddy.
I feel better. It's good to be home. But anyways, Strowman comes out to talk about the Money in the Bank briefcase match, and he says that winning the briefcase would be the opportunity for him to get a title match, and that Brock Lesnar's going to get these hands. Finn Balor is out to rebuff his statement and talk to Strowman about what happened last week on Monday Night Raw when Strowman actually did beat Balor in the main event in what was one of the few highlights of last week's episode. They brawl for a little bit. Kurt Angle comes out, and we get a rematch 7 days later, Finn Balor versus Braun Strowman. But instead of main eventing the show, this time it jerks the curtain. Tony, are you okay with going back-to-back weeks with Strowman versus Balor here?
Yeah, I mean, they're great. This was a very noticeably different match, though, and that's really the only thing that bothered me. And it didn't bother me to a point where I was rolling my eyes, but it was like, didn't we just see a somewhat competitive match a week ago? Now we're watching an elongated squash match with the same two people. And you could say that Kevin Owens was goading it on, but I don't think so, man. I think that they just, again, it's that back and forth booking where we're going to make Finn look strong this week. Oh, we made him look strong. So now we have to make Braun look strong this week to make sure that everybody's on an even keel. So let's just make Finn basically look like a jobber. For a very long match, yeah. I mean, not long, but it felt long because of that. Like, you could only see Finn get tossed around so many times before you're like, all right, I get it. Braun's big, Finn's small.
I don't think there's any chance of Strowman winning the briefcase, Andrew. Do you buy Balor as a viable contender for that thing?
I don't really know. Like, unless Balor pulls out the demon anytime soon, it kind of follows suit with what Tony was saying with, you can't have them get, who the hell is beeping? Somebody take your cake out of the oven. What the fuck was that?
That was Tony.
All right, finish baking, and then mute your headset. Come on. But anyway, the point I was getting at was, you can't have Balor get thrown around or get jerked around by Seth Rollins, who's supposed to be the champion of the belt that's a step under the Universal, and still be taken as a, you know, legitimate, you know, threat to the belt. Like, I don't know. That whole match was more getting Owens over than anything for Braun and Finn in my assessment of it, because Owens' commentary was funny. Owens goading them along as one got the advantage, and then he just kind of cheered them on or said something. It was amusing. It was nice. It kind of added to his character and gave him and Braun a little extra heat. So it kind of worked for what it was supposed to do, I guess.
Well, speaking of Kevin, he takes advantage of the circumstance post-match in order to try to make his exit. Kurt Angle stops him from doing so after he attacked Balor with a ladder and tried to attack Strowman with a ladder. Angle stops Owens from making his exit and lets Owens know that he will be competing a little bit later on in the show against Bobby Roode. Up next, because I'm going to skip the women's promos and stuff, we'll talk about all that stuff in a vacuum once we get to the main event.
That's good.
Elias comes down to ringside to play us a tune, bickering back and forth with the crowd until we come back from commercial, and he's interrupted by Seth Rollins before his Intercontinental title match against Jinder Mahal. Elias slowly slinks away, and we go into the IC title match, which sees Seth Rollins lose by disqualification but retain his Intercontinental title. Tony, with Jinder already having the match set against Roman at Money in the Bank, did you buy Mahal as a viable threat to Rollins here?
Do you buy Mahal as a viable threat to anyone, regardless of any future match he may have? No. So that wasn't really in question. Again, I mean, going back to what we talked about before, I think it was just Andrew and myself with regards to the open challenge matches. Like, they only mean as much as you make them out to mean, and this didn't really mean anything. With that being said, it was a good match, considering who was involved, and it tied in, Elias, a little bit. So that's cool. You're keeping him in the mix. Seth Rollins going for that chair shot is, I mean, it's like, yeah, he's a face, but it didn't really throw me off. It was just like, yeah, well, it's his birthday. He can do whatever the fuck he wants.
They say it's your birthday. Anywho, Andrew, your thoughts on the Mahal and Rollins match?
The chair spot seemed completely unnecessary, and it seemed like overkill for no reason whatsoever. Like, he already dispatched of the Singh because he played Fling the Singh into the corner and hit Jinder Mahal, so he got extra bonus points or however the fuck that game works. And Jinder was done. Like, all he had to do was hit a blackout or, a revolution knee or whatever the hell he wanted to do. The match was over. There was literally no reason for him to hit the guy with a chair. Nothing whatsoever.
What's weird is that the only reason why they did that was to protect Jinder, which means they didn't want to give Seth a clean win. And that's weird to me. Like it's Jinder.
Well, to be fair, Roman wasn't on the show. Not like that's a spoiler to anybody, even though we're only partway in there. So I guess it was a way to kind of keep everybody looking strong in both of the feuds. And I don't know. See, the part that irritated me the most going into this was the fact that Elias's thing just dragged on so long. So long.
So obviously.
Yes, and it was just, there was no playing. There was no any kind of suspension of disbelief. It literally felt like he was just waiting for a cue, and he was coming up with different reasons to just, stall the crowd. And it was annoying. That was like one of the few times since he's come up from NXT that Elias just pissed me off with his presence. And I'm like, God damn it. And then that match just ended weird. I'm like, son of a bitch. It was a good match up until the completely unnecessary ending.
Well, what was necessary was Rollins celebrating with the chair, because apparently he needed to have a chair in order to celebrate running off Mahal. And for the record, Fling This Thing needs to be a t-shirt, because I would totally buy that.
I guess we should talk to Greg.
But anywho, Rollins is celebrating on top of the announce table, and here comes Elias with El Kabong with breakaway guitar, nice touch, to send Seth flipping ass over tea kettle down to the crash pad, floor below.
See, that is what happened.
Andrew, Elias versus Seth Rollins at Money in the Bank for the IC title. Buy or sell?
I don't know. It depends on how awake I am during that, because I might not be able to tell who's who, so that might be fun. I could just be confused the whole time.
Tony, same question. God damn you.
What was the question?
Elias and Rollins at Money in the Bank for the IC title. Buy or sell?
I pay $9.99 a month for it, so I guess buy. It's fine. I'm not bothered by it. It's cool, I suppose. Although, I've never seen a guitar shot create a stretcher job, so I don't know what he has in those axes, but he's got to be swinging some heavy heat there. Like, damn.
All right, Tony, I'm going to let you take the Nia Jax Ronda Rousey segment, because I got no fucking words here.
I got three words. What the fuck? Okay, first of all, if we're doing this from a kayfabe standpoint, what you're saying is big bad wrestler who we've grown to know and love because she's been bullied by a little meek Alexa Bliss who just wants to sit in a cup. It's just a cup. So we have been led to believe for months that she has been ridiculed and put down and treated like lesser than and just been bullied, you know, for this lengthy amount of time, longer than we've cared to care. We see this same woman come down to the ring and bully a female wrestler. We see her destroy this woman. That alone, that in itself is an issue of just really bad storytelling. Like, really, is that what we're doing? Then you couple that with the reality that you're using this 120, 110, maybe 100 even pound woman as an example of Ronda Rousey. You're saying that this is her equal. You're saying, look, I'm going to let this girl do an armbar on me just like I would allow you to, just to show you how little it will work. Said woman tries it, fails, dies, gets brought back to life with a leg drop and then dies again. Nia Jax committed murder twice tonight, maybe three times with that horrible fucking promo. You can't. There's no direct comparison, and you can't even stand by the idea that, oh well, this is funny, because guess what, it wasn't funny. And then Ronda is at the commentary booth, not knowing what to say. No one's feeding her line, so she's like, yeah, no, no, she's no. Nah. And then she gets in the ring, and we're supposed to believe now that Nia Jax is a heel. That just happened tonight. It's probably going to change in 2 weeks. And she tells Ronda, oh, there's that intimidating little smirk. It's not intimidating. It's dot, dot, dot. And instead of saying something cool like hot, she says something stupid. The point is, this thing was bad. It was bad. She calls Ronda cute. She giggles. She turns her back and then walks away. And we're supposed to believe, oh, this match is going to fucking rock the socks off, man. We're going to get Nia's leg drop against Ronda's smirk, and we're going to be happy campers. This was stupid, and I hope and I pray that there's only one dude in the writer's circle, or woman, whatever, that writes these horrible segments. I really, really want this to be one person who wrote Bailey's This Is My Life, who wrote last week's segment with the sisters, who wrote the Katie Vick angle, who wrote this most recent Nia Jax moment. Because if it's one person, then I could just be like, hey, you, one person, you suck at this. You should stop doing it. But we know that it's not. It's a group of wrestlers sitting in a semicircle saying, ha, yeah, this is going to be great.
Andrew, follow that.
I mean, the only thing I can follow that with is, you see, she's not a heel. What that was if you've ever played a Final Fantasy or a role-playing game, this is what we like to call a tutorial or a walkthrough. You see, Ronda's never had a singles match on TV, so Nia was doing her the favor of coming down and showing her how a match would play out against her. So it was really just out of the goodness of Nia's heart that she was just doing a nice little exhibition, or, you know, if you like fighting games like Street Fighter or something like that, you go to the dojo and you practice on the dummy. Like, you try to pull off your combo moves. If they don't work, you look a little dumb, or the dummy gets its ass kicked. This poor random girl was said dummy. That's all this was. It was nothing more than just an exhibition show. It's not a heel face thing. Come on. Well, you're better than that, Tony. Come on.
So what you're saying is that after this, Ronda now has more HP and AP and can go into her first official battle.
She does. She had to build up her experience and her stats. Yes. Didn't you know that?
Wow. Well, that just blows the Chocobo out of my mind. Wow.
Does your Chocobo say work or quee is the real question.
All right. Well, now that we showed our nerddom, let's move on.
Real quick here, my big takeaway from this segment, I can't even speak because of how stupid it was. My big takeaway for this segment was the woman who just spent the better part of the last 3 months trying to prove she wasn't a bully just basically acted like the exact bully that Alexa said she was. Fan-fucking-tastic.
Let's just give a name to this unknown singular writer who has created all of this badness, because I know it's just one person. Let's just give him a name.
Greg.
Let's assume it's a male, and we're going to call him Frank Watry.
We could have called him Greg, just to be funny.
Greg Watry is even funnier, I think.
Oh, there we go.
Yes!
So from now on, every week we're going to pick a segment that Greg Watry wrote and highlight it. That's what I'm thinking.
So we're going to actually put that into the format, the Greg Watry Memorial Segment Award?
The Greg Watry Moment. It's going to be beautiful. We may even
That should be something we vote on at the end. What was the Greg Watry moment of the show? Instead of least favorite, it's the Greg Watry moment.
Oh, Andrew, you just read my fucking mind starting tonight.
Wow. You guys, anyone who's listening, you're listening to history being made.
History. Oh, where's Michael Cole when we need it?
We really are just saying shit to pop ourselves tonight. All right, moving on. Tag team champions Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt go non-title against the Ascension. The Ascension does basically what the Ascension does. I believe the proper word for it is fuck. It ends up being Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt with the double flatliner at 4 minutes and 45 seconds. Anything?
I mean, you know, they keep winning, so that's cool. I mean, they're, you know. I don't know. The Ascension never, even in NXT, the few times that I watched it, when they were kind of like coming up and being a big deal, they worked as a cohesive unit, as a team, but they didn't really they didn't make me feel like they were a must-watch both in NXT and when they were brought up. So every time I see them, regardless of the face paint, I'm just kind of like, eh.
Yep.
Andrew?
That's basically how I feel, too. Like, when they got called up and they tried to make them into, like, the knockoff Road Warriors and Demolition, and then they were disrespecting old teams and they got squashed during one of the, you know, multiple anniversary shows that, you know, Raw has. Like, I don't care. I didn't care then. I don't care now. I will say they got a little more offense in than I was expecting, kind of. But, you know, still nothing special, nothing impressive.
Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel have an exchange with Kurt Angle backstage. Axel actually cracks me up at one point with his comment about Kurt, despite Kurt standing right next to him. And they announce a Memorial Day tag team barbecue for later in the show. You sure you guys want to give away your Watchery Award so early?
That wasn't
as bad as
the Nia match, the Nia thing.
Yeah.
No.
The mini promo backstage was actually kind of like, you keep doing that, you're going to give these guys personality. They're going to garner fandom. That's great. You do more moments like this, you give them an actual role. Regardless of how cheesy or asinine the role may be, they have an actual role. Now, what it led to is nearing the GW moment of the night, you know? So we'll get to that. Or actually, we might as well talk about it now.
Let's roll right into it.
Barbecue in the middle of the ring where Titus O'Neil was the funniest person. That's not saying a lot, but still. among the reality of this being just dumb, one thing that, and this is not going to be a surprise to anybody, but one thing that bothered me immensely was the fact that we had Michael Cole chuckling the entire time. Have you ever watched a comedic movie for the first time next to a person who has seen the movie 10,000 times and can't wait for you to watch it? Because that's what we saw tonight. It was nothing but laughter before the jokes came out, laughter before the punchlines were hit, little chuckles just to let you know that what you're watching really is funny. So funny, in fact, that the Stone Cold Serious commentary team cannot even keep it together for these moments. I mean, pork and beans poured over a man's head is comedy at the utmost degree. You cannot find that in any Bill Murray movie, let me tell you, because this stuff is top-notch. Wow.
The sarcasm is strong with you tonight.
Yeah, somebody pissed in Tony's cornflakes today, and I'm loving it, because this is the most upset I have ever heard him on the show, and it's making for great radio.
You guys,
Andrew,
Rhino sat there eating bologna sandwiches, and I was supposed to be okay with
it. See, that actually did kind of make me chuckle, because that's totally within Rhino to just want to sit there and eat.
This is true. They've kind of made him out to be, like, the white trash uncle on, like... I really want Rhino to, like, have a cameo on Roseanne, because his character now just seems like it would fit that whole kind of dynamic. But...
that checks out.
I think the reason why, like, you had Cole chuckling is because of the fact that every time it was Corey or Coach were trying to add some kind of seriousness to the situation, Cole would just take the piss out of it and just be like, we've seen food fights for 10,000 years. Don't you remember Thanksgiving? Hey, this is always something that happens. And it's like, okay, yeah. So, honestly, we've all seen this movie 10,000 times, so we knew how it was going to end. It was just kind of how the characters played out, and I don't know. Bo naming things like these stupid B words or after himself like potato chips or potato salad, like that popped me a little bit just with how campy and how stupid it was. But oh man, the worst thing that came from this is the fact that now we have another crappy gauntlet match where a tag team couldn't win it last time and now we're supposed to believe they can now. So that's the weird part that came out of all of this to me.
Actually, it's even worse than a gauntlet match, Andrew. It's a battle royal.
Oh, you're right. It is. God, that's even worse. God damn it.
And now I'm pissing in Andrew's cornflakes. Anywho, our next contest on the show was Bobby Roode taking on Kevin Owens. After a trading of finisher attempts, Owens goes for the pop-up powerbomb. Roode lands on his feet. Owens sweeps the leg and gets a sit-down sunset flip cradle for the pinfall victory clean at 9 minutes and 45 seconds. Were you guys surprised to see Owens beat Roode cleanly?
No.
No.
Post-match, Braun Strowman shows up and power slams Kevin not once but twice. And then power slams Roode as well. Yet again, lending further credence to my belief that there's no chance in hell that Strowman's winning the briefcase. Would you guys be interested in seeing what Strowman would be capable of with the briefcase?
He doesn't need it.
I would.
Perfect, kinda.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't need it, which is a perfect reason for the WWE to give it to him, because they love to do that. I would love if Braun won the briefcase and then just went and beat Brock's ass and won the title, and that was it. That would create a star that has been waiting to blow up for over a year now. But they won't do that. And yeah, he's not going to win. You know, if someone sat down and watched Raw today and said to myself, if there were a hierarchy of the talent, if there were to be, say, a list of who they favor the most, how difficult would it be to figure out? And I would say to them, watch Raw. Because this match, this moment, this entire segment gave you a list. Said Bobby Roode is at the bottom. Kevin Owens is on top of him. Braun Strowman is better than both of them because he could throw a ladder. And then, you know, between Kevin and Braun, Seth Rollins is somewhere in there. Elias goes up and down, but he's definitely not nearly as cool as Owens. But you could make the chart, and it would be pretty astute, and there wouldn't be any, like, maybe we could switch these guys, maybe we can't. That's not a good thing. You don't have, so wrestling, there's some wrestling promotions out there that create lists that make it beneficial if you're at the top of said fictional list, and it creates storyline. It creates a ready-made storytelling device that is set there for you to just add stuff to. The WWE doesn't really do that. I think they tried it on SmackDown for like 2 weeks, and then it just kind of disappeared. But something that I've always thought to myself while watching wrestling is that if there's a main event circle, then everyone should be on somewhat of an equal footing. That does not equate to winning or losing. That doesn't equate to a winning record. It equates to their stance in said arena of the main event or the mid-card or the IC title picture or whatever it may be. And there was a time when the WWE did this really, really well, when you felt like, yeah, that makes perfect sense for that guy to be in the main event or for that guy to be facing for the IC title or for that title to even be as important as the main event.
I think they lost that within the past few years, and it's just been really, really hard to gain that traction back, because we watch the show tonight, and we see all these guys, and you don't believe certain moments. You don't believe Finn Balor is going to beat Braun Strowman because of the way that they treated him tonight. You don't believe that Elias is going to beat Seth, because even with a guitar smack that led to a stretcher job. Similarly, you don't believe that Bobby Roode has a chance in hell to win the briefcase because of what we saw tonight. So this long-winded diatribe of whether or not, you know, Roode is going to become something resembling, you know, watchable, the answer is I don't think so.
Available for parties and bar mitzvahs, Tony Acero.
Yeah, he's fun at parties.
Yeah. Speaking of which, let's talk about real quick how crazy it is that I'm alive right now, considering the excessive amount of alcohol that I've consumed over the past several days. Good Lord.
Do you remember your vacation is the main question.
I will not lie to you. There is about an hour and a half of Saturday night that I don't remember at all, and had to piece together with various gratuitous photos of a female in my phone.
That's not too bad, actually, then.
Hey,
yeah,
if that's
pretty,
the worst way
nice.
You're spending, if that's the worst way you're spending a Saturday night, you're doing okay in my book.
Well, you know the life I live. It chose me.
I do. Sami Zayn's apology segment. Tony?
No, I've talked way too much, you guys.
All right, Andrew, I'll let you have first crack at this one then.
I mean, like I said in our chat last week, because we didn't have a show, and I'll just say it now to put it back out into the cosmos. Yes, what I said before with Tony when, you know, you weren't here, Harry, was true. We got guys dressed up in drag as sisters, and it was terrible. But I knew it was going to happen because it's a WWE product, and Vince pops on that kind of crap. And Sammy trying to, you know, apologize and do whatever, like that smarmy kind of half-apology, not really apology thing. It's like, who cares? And I say that because Bobby Lashley still got no reaction. No one cares. No one wants this match, and it's not because of Sammy. Sammy's likable. Sammy's a good, smarmy heel. Bobby is worthless at the moment. Nobody knows what to make of him. Nobody wants him there. Nobody cares that he's there. You have a problem when you bring back a monster and a dominator, and nobody wants to get up to even clap or boo. Like, what the hell is wrong with this thing?
Johnny?
Okay, so Bobby Lapathy is here for everyone, and no one knows who he is or cares. You can claim that you try to give us some sort of exposition with a small backstory about sisters, but that led to a segment that people are putting in the same vein as the Bayley This Is Your Life segment. That is not a compliment. Sami Zayn is an amazing person on the mic, and he couldn't even properly salvage what happened. You know, there's an old adage that says, you know, don't ask for permission, ask for an apology, or something along those lines. When it comes to WWE's scripted promos and whatnot, you probably shouldn't go that route. I mean, it just, again, this was the GW moment of the night in of last week, who thought this was funny? Who in this semicircle of men and women around the table that have degrees and experience in writing television thought to themselves, yes, this is going to work. This is how we're going to build this program. This is going to get people firmly behind Bobby Lashley. Who thought that that was true? Who thought that this was going to work? Who thought that this was a good idea in any arena of television entertainment? Who thought this was going to work? The only time I see this type of humor is like in Mexican television for weird people that have three fake dots on each cheek to represent freckles. I don't get it. I don't I don't understand what world they're coming from where they think that this could possibly work. You could even go so far as to say, yeah, you know what, we're going to do this and we're going to make it shitty because next week he's going to apologize for how shitty it is, and then he's going to say, no, never mind, I'm not sorry, and that's going to be great television. To whoever said that, I want you to know, it wasn't great television, you dumbass.
The answer to your first question, Tony, is it is easier to beg forgiveness than ask permission.
Sure, yeah.
The answer to your second question, Tony, is that apparently they get some really good meth up in the writer's room to think that this shit would work.
Hmm.
What in the goddamn fuck is going on around here?
Yeah, I don't know. It could just be they don't know what to do with Sammy's character, to be completely honest. We could just be seeing something equivalent to, like, they don't get his type of heel character, so they're kind of writing him like Gilbert Gottfried, where he's just kind of slapdash, crude, eccentric humor, and then he'll try to, like, bullshit his way through an apology and just be unlikable because of that, and that'll somehow make people care about Bobby if you make him so repulsive. But, I don't know. Carrot Top still has fans, so, I don't know.
True. You know, I saw Gilbert Gottfried stand up last year in person. That man is a national treasure. I could not believe how funny he was. I thought, oh, this is going to suck. Dude was on fire, and he's like 902. Like, he walks like an old man.
Yeah.
And talks like a, I don't know, he was great. Slight aside. But yeah, so
yeah, how dare you?
Let's give him a little bit more credit than that.
Yeah, how dare you denigrate the good goddamn name of Gilbert Gottfried?
Tony, you said you thought it was going to suck when you went into it. That tells you enough right there. Maybe that's what you need to do with WWE. From now on, we should just all go in assuming it'll suck, and then we'll be happy at the end if it's, you know, slightly above bar.
No, we won't. And they're on SmackDown, so we don't even discuss them.
That's kind of what I do every Monday night anyway.
Yeah, but you need to write about it, so that just makes it hurt more. That's what the problem is with you.
I'm a masochist.
Tony needs a couple of weeks off the Raw report in order to make this shit more entertaining to him.
I just listened to Enzo Amore's song 13 times within 30 minutes to review it for a site.
Or that thing, goddamn. You're betting 1,000 today, aren't you, Tony?
I guess so.
Drew McIntyre and Chad Gable in one of the better matches on tonight's episode of Raw, although you could not convince the crowd of this because they sat on their fucking hands for most of it.
That's a believability issue, like Tony was talking about.
McIntyre's Claymore looks brutal at the finish, but, okay, so one of my, I actually watched Raw tonight with Jimmy C. Tony knows who that is. Andrew, I don't believe you had the pleasure. And while watching the show, he says to me, this is an obvious setup to bring Jason Jordan back to team with Chad Gable as American Alpha once again in order to have them feud with McIntyre and Ziggler. Tony, do you buy that as credible?
I don't. Who? Ziggler, credible in the same sentence? I'm not really. Huh?
I think Tony spaced out for a second. You might want to repeat yourself.
All right, let's try this again then. Do you believe that it is possible? Okay, Jimmy C's idea. I'm as drunk as Tony wishes he was right now. Anywho, Jimmy C's idea was that this entire McIntyre and Ziggler versus Gable program is a way to bring Jason Jordan back as a tag team with Chad Gable and reunite American Alpha after the failed Angle Sun experiment. Do you buy that as a possibility? And if so, are you okay with it?
I mean, sure, it's a possibility. Is anybody going to care? No. Gable is one of those perfect face in peril type people who you want to get behind. And he's also a really good wrestler, so it's great. But Drew McIntyre has a presence.
where you're just like, I'm kind of okay with him beating Chad Gable's ass. I mean, look, he just lifted him like nothing. So it's going to be really hard for people to pop when Jason Jordan comes out, unless you're like 12 and below. I don't see people going crazy for a return for him, unless you like demolish Chad Gable. I'm talking beat his ass until he like possibly bleeds just a bit, or like it just looks really, really bad. Like, and make it Dolph Ziggler. Make Dolph Ziggler do that. Don't make it Drew, because I think Drew is too likable in his disdain, in his persona. Yes, definitely. There you go. Badassery. You make Dolph do it, people hate Dolph. I hate Dolph. So it's going to be, that will make it more impactful. That will make Jason Jordan's return, Kurt Angle's son, who no one gives a shit about, mean something. But are they going to do that? Probably not. They'll bring Jason Jordan back after a Claymore. Dolph Ziggler's going to hold Chad Gable by the chin and yell at him and say a bunch of stuff as his top ramen hair wiggles, you know, profusely. And then Jordan's going to come running down to make the save, and that's going to be that. That's it. And it's going to suck.
Andrew, I'm going to ask you a question here, and I want an honest opinion. Buy or sell, McIntyre is the Raw Heavyweight Champion by the end of the year.
I mean, by that I'm assuming you mean Universal Champion, because Raw doesn't have a heavyweight champion. But yes, yeah, by the end of the calendar year, by the end of the WWE, are we talking Mania or December?
Mania.
I think it's a little too soon. I see McIntyre getting it some point next year, but I don't think he'll get it by Mania, just because they're trying to reintegrate him, and it'd be nice for him to have another intercontinental run before he gets the big push, just to kind of draw some symmetry back to his broken dreams, Drew McIntyre, and what he is now. So I see it soon, but I think that's just a touch too soon.
I miss the Shaman's Harvest theme song, but the new one's not bad.
Agreed.
We have the aforementioned B-Team Memorial Day cookout next, not worth going into again. We announce a quadruplet of matches. I think that works. As Owens versus Balor, Strowman versus Rude, the number one tag team battle, the number one contenders tag team battle royal, and Natalya versus Nia Jax for next week's episode of Raw. Any of these stand out to you as particularly entertaining and or interesting?
Sure, yeah.
I was about to say, the lack of anybody wanting to talk should say enough.
You know, it's sad to think that, because of how important that Balor versus Owens match has been in the past, you know? Like, let's look at what that match meant to NXT, and now they're throwing it on this episode of Monday Night Raw 2 weeks before Money in the Bank, and none of us give a shit.
Yeah. I mean, you could also look at it as two former Universal Champions going up against each other, and still no one cares, because they're not being billed for us to care.
The WWE has been in such a mode of going through the motions that they have created a fandom that does the same thing. Do you know why we watch Raw? I'm speaking for you guys, and I could be wrong, but we watch Raw so that we can do this show. We don't like that. I watch Raw because I have to do it for 411mania.com. I can't remember the last time I was like hyped. I do remember the last time I was hyped, because I was disappointed immediately after. I was so hyped for the Raw after Mania, and then they went and they said, hey, guess what, this is the Raw after Mania, it's the best one yet. Thanks, dickwad. You couldn't just let me feel that on my own. So until they change that dynamic, until they
change that feeling that they've created for us, we're going to continue to feel this way. The only time us wrestling fans get super excited about pay-per-views is when WrestleMania comes around. And every year for the past, 4 years, I think, we have talked about how bad they did. And it's not because that's what makes the show. We're not here to be negative. It's simply like, man, I wish y'all would just do, like, you, it's so, I think what bothers us the most is that it is seemingly, of course none of us have actually done it, but it is seemingly so easy to be more entertaining than what they currently are. And we base that off of what we've seen before from the very same people. We've seen you guys be good at this. We've seen you put on Raws that were like, damn, that was great. Wrestling centric, entertaining, funny. That was awesome. We've seen all of this, and we've seen you do it, and we've seen you do it well. So why do we more often than not get this shitty rendition of something that we've seen multiple times be better? Ugh.
Our main event is the gauntlet match for the final spot in the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. Bayley, Liv Morgan, Sarah Logan, Ruby Riott, Dana Brooke, Mickey James, Sasha Banks in that order. Sasha ends up picking up the win, last tapping Ruby Riott with the bank statement, despite the fact that the ropes were right fucking there in order to advance to the Money in the Bank match. I have a tirade of my own to go on at the end of this, so I'm going to let you guys go ahead and get yours out of the way first. Andrew, I start with you.
Oh, okay, because I don't really have a tirade. Like, I don't know what people expected of this match. Like, we've seen multiple women's matches that end up the same way. A couple people get squashed, like Liv was worthless. Sarah tried, did a little bit of something. Ruby had a decent run that was a little surprising. And even her moments with, like, Mickey and Sasha weren't that great. Like, the crowd was hot for Mickey because it was her hometown, so she got the hometown pop, but I don't know. I was really just disinterested with this entire gauntlet match, and it kind of ended the way I figured it would anyway, because unless they gave Mickey the random rub because it was in her hometown, like, Sasha was the only logical one to come out of that. And, I don't know. My major takeaway was just a corny-ass pun, and that was, if Sasha was still on the indies, I guess she would change her, you know, gimmick name to Mercedes KT Tape. Hey, because her arm was all taped up in that KT Tape. Yeah, okay, I'm done. Next.
First of all, there's no such thing as a cheesy pun, Andrew. You let them rip, big boy. You let those bad things out.
Tony, you got anything to add here?
Yeah, I'm a big pun fan.
See, that's a hip-hop pun.
I know. I figured you were going to make that reference. Good job. I preferred Fat Joe, but that's just me.
He's just Joe now.
No, Joe was the guy that sang with him on those songs. That's why he's not a player. He just crushes a lot.
Well, have you seen Fat Joe? He's just Joe. He's just.
He's trimmed down that much?
Oh
no,
my God!
I'm pretty sure that guy's dead now. Actually.
Big Pun is dead. Fat,
yes, big,
formerly no. Fat Joe, is alive.
No, I mean just Joe. That was a WWF reference. Never mind.
Yeah, we're talking about Hip Hop Harry. Get with the times, okay? Jeez.
So Tony, Joe ever did their song again, how would we be able to tell who's who if Fat Joe's not fat anymore?
One of the two would reference food or how big they were.
How big they were at the time of making the song.
And then we would know. Ah, okay. He's the big one. Got it. Now, this mini-conversation is brought to you by our complete apathy towards the final match of Raw tonight. Look, there's, like Andrew said, there is no surprise here. In theory, a match like this is supposed to be awesome. A gauntlet match where, when one person loses, another one comes in and we're getting more wrestling? Awesome. Similar to a beat-the-clock match, similar to a Gold Rush match, similar to whatever the hell they did when Bischoff was around, all of these matches are good in theory. But then you watch them on WWE television and you realize you have 13 minutes to hypothetically put six matches together. You know what you're going to get. You're going to get three quick falls in quick succession that mean absolutely nothing, that prior to this you would be like, what the fuck just happened? But we're supposed to be okay with it because it's a gauntlet match. Somehow that diminishes the talent that these wrestlers have. Whereas before, you see a 30-second match, you're just blown away. But because it's in this little vacuum known as gimmick match, it doesn't matter anymore. We just see these things happen, and it happens with every match like this, not just tonight. And it's annoying because that's not what you've led us to believe for years on end. What the hell just happened? You get the whole Bayley's a face, and she's, you know, super good at all of this. And then what match was it where it was the Sasha Banks finally came out. And I believe it was roughly 23 seconds before she started acting as if she was in a match for 30 minutes. Like, it was a part where she was in the corner and she crawled on her knees towards Ruby Riott. And this was that, like, back-and-forth moment where the crowd was like, yes, no, yes, boo, yes. That moment that comes in matches when you're, like, you as a fan are on the edge of your seat, like, near exhaustion because they've been going at it for a while, and this is that moment where they're both just so, they're just so taken out. They're so tired, and they're fighting with everything they have. So Sasha feels that way in 23 seconds of a match? On even, like, I know these are minuscule things. I know there's small things to complain about, but it really takes you out of the show as a fan. And you're like, well, come on, I know wrestling's fake, but throw me a freaking bone here. What was that? Oh, Sasha's tired? No, because I saw her go 30 minutes plus with Bayley on an amazing pay-per-view, and now you're telling me that in half a minute, she's so exhausted she can't even stand up? Come on. Like, again, it's so small, but it just bothered me to no end. Ruby Riott, I mean, she continues to impress me in terms of wrestling skill. I think that if they let her have time in matches, she's going to be something viable. No matter what my little brother says behind me, every time there's a side profile of Ruby, he literally looks at the TV and says, oh my God, stop. And I didn't understand what he meant until he explained, she's just so ugly. And I'm like, that's very harsh, you know, but I thought I'd let you guys know. I don't feel one way or the other. As long as the woman can wrestle well, then I'm okay with it. But yeah, that's what I took away from this match completely, as far as the critique goes. The idea that any match like this or similar to this, we're supposed to seemingly believe that these people have lost all talent that's been given to them. And another one, best 2 out of 3 falls. Every single best 2 out of 3 falls that you think in your head is going to be a wrestling clinic turns out to be quick, stupid first fall, random ass second fall, and then a real match. And it's like, why even give me a 2 out of 3 falls if that's what you're going to do? Go to any indie show and they have a 2 out of 3 falls match, you're going to see gold. You're going to see two guys busting their ass, and you're going to be like, holy shit. WWE, I can't remember the last 2 out of 3 falls match where I was like, yep, that was amazing.
Austin and Triple H back in 2001.
2001, guys. I was a sophomore in high school.
I would have been a... No, you wouldn't have been a sophomore because I would have been a sophomore, and I think I'm older than you.
You are more sophomore.
No, I was a sophomore in high school.
All right, so I said I had a tirade for this, but I think I'm just going to go ahead and let my guest tirade instead.
Oh, shit. Here we go.
Hi, Tony.
What up, my Fortnite freak?
Hello. So I couldn't help but overhear you guys are talking about the women's revolution, which is never, ever bad and always really, really good. Man. So we had this wonderful gauntlet match, which by no way was it easy to predict that Sasha would obviously enter last and win, because they would never, ever do that ever, except always. But, man, okay. So this gauntlet match was absolute shit. I'm just going to jump right into it. First of all, Liv Morgan gets nothing. Bayley What the fuck did she even do with Sarah Logan? And then she was gone in like a heartbeat. Then, you know, magic, you know, Liv Morgan reappears. They beat down Bayley. And then, you know, which is weird because, it, you know, then Ruby Riott comes in, goes through two other chicks after that. But before that, she has to take down a beaten Bayley. And it's just like, if you're going to let Ruby Riott beat up two other chicks, just let her have a decent match with Bayley, first of all. But that's neither here nor there. So then Bayley gets eliminated. Dana Brooke comes in, you know, she's hot. She gets eliminated. Mickie James comes in, and because she caught the hometown virus, she gets eliminated. And then you get Sasha to come in last, which is, you know, just perfectly perfect booking because the Women's Revolution is always good and never bad. And she goes over Ruby Riott magically after also going through the Riott Squad magically. And yes, Tony, in 2 minutes, she was very, very tired. Man, this match didn't even need to happen. It was so bad. And, you know, Tony brings up a good point because in 13 minutes, you have to put together six fucking matches. And, you know, and that's just WWE's fault. You know, number one, they should have known better. They should have given it a half hour if they wanted it to be good. But obviously they didn't because the Women's Revolution is always very, very good and never very, very bad. That being said, and Harry's going to point out how the final fall, or I guess it wasn't a fall so much as a submission. Does that count as a fall? I don't know. I don't care.
One fall. So,
one fall.
Oh,
no, it's just, you know, it's another one of those opportunities for WWE to give the women's division, the women's quote unquote revolution, this big hurrah. Like, hey, we're gonna main event the flagship show. We're gonna put a whole bunch of you in it. And it's supposed to mean something. It's supposed to be the final spot in the women's Money in the Bank match, which is, you know, good for a title shot if you win that. So it should be a really big deal. And they instantly poop on the Riott Squad. They make sure Bayley doesn't get in because apparently Bayley doesn't need it, even though she's perfect for at least getting in the match. Since you're putting all these other names in the match as far as the women's division. I also hate that Lana's in the match, but no members of the Riott Squad nor Absolution are in the match at all, so they're not even looking to try to give the, or Billie Kay or Peyton Royce, none of them are in that match, so none of the new girls are in it. Don't give them anything, and make sure to keep Bayley out because apparently she doesn't draw except for all the people that do the hugger signs and buy her merchandise and do all that. But the Women's Revolution is always very, very good, never very, very bad. I want to be absolute emphasis on that.
I'm trying to get over this aneurysm I had from going over that match again, so I'm going to go ahead and cut it there. Thank you for having me on. Harry, have a good night. Good seeing you. Tony, always good to hear from you.
Hello, other random person who thinks he can take my job.
I've been doing it pretty decently for like 5 months, so hey.
Not wrong.
That's debatable.
You've only
Thanks
been
for
here for like four of them, Mr. and Mrs. every other week.
All right, that's fair. Thanks for joining us, Jimmy. See you. Have a good night, brother.
Bye-bye.
All right. So, couple of things here, and then we'll go ahead and get into a final wrap-up here because we're about an hour in, and frankly, most of it has just been us riffing back and forth. Congratulations, lady. You got the main event on what will be the lowest-rated episode of Monday Night Raw of the year because it's on a holiday up against Game 1 of the Stanley Cup, Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. Thank you, fuck you, goodbye. Second of all, Sasha Banks wins, LOL. Tony, I know you love her, but that big foreheaded bitch needs to go away. She adds nothing to the product right now because her character is so goddamn stale me and Jimmy C were talking about this earlier. She is the female John Cena right now, and in the worst ways possible. Third, let's go ahead and make both members of backup for the Riot Squad look like absolute fucking jokes by having Bayley beat them in 15 seconds and then approximately 2 minutes with Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan. The only member of the Riot Squad that got any kind of shine whatsoever was Ruby Riott. Do not get me wrong, I am a huge fan of Ruby, and as Tony said, there will be good things in Ruby Riott's future, but the further they get her disassociated from Liv and Sarah, if this is how they're going to treat them, the better for Ruby's long-term perspective, because she cannot be associated with a couple of jobbers such as this and continue to have any kind of clout in the mainstream upper level of the women's division on either Raw or SmackDown. Fourth, how in the fuck is Lana in this ladder match and Bayley not? It's like Lana's on Total Divas, so we got to give her something. Well, where's Bayley? Oh, she's not. So, oh well. Really? I guess
well,
if there's four spots for all.
Lana spelled backwards is anal.
Thanks, Tony.
And she's on SmackDown, and it has to be 4-4, so someone's gonna get
I was
cut
just
from
about
one.
To, just about to touch on that, Andrew. I get that it has to be 4 from Raw, 4 from SmackDown. Well, then fucking move Bayley in the Superstar Shakeup if you have nothing for her on Raw. All right, I think I'm done for now. I feel better. I think I'm
okay. Okay, well, I'm just bothered at the fact that the matches were back-to-back-to-back without any break or anything like that, and we got what would be deemed a disqualification almost immediately when Sarah Logan was eliminated, I guess you could say. So I didn't really understand that. It was a mess, you know, it was messy. And it was another one of those moments where if you have such a long time between pay-per-views, then you have this impression of we have to make the obvious not so obvious until we can make it obvious. And obviously, Sasha Banks was going to be in the match. So it took a long time to get somewhere we already knew we were going. And that's unfortunate, you know. Harry, don't ever talk about Sasha's forehead again, or I'll have to roast you, and that will not be pretty. Okay, there's a reason why your last name is Broadhurst, because when you die... I'm kidding.
Oh, God. The puns, here they come.
And that officially wraps up tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. Favorite match or moment, Tony?
Oh, yeah, we still got to do that shit. I almost said a match with gender in it. Jesus, slow down, Tony, hold on. Whoa, that was weird. I don't want to do it, but I think Seth Rollins had the best match on Raw tonight. Yeah, because Owens and Rude was kind of boring. Finn and Braun was basically a squash match. There weren't any actual moments that I really like thought were the best. So I guess by process of elimination, Seth Rollins versus Jinder Mahal was my favorite match or moment of Raw. Oh, that hurt. Okay.
While Tony seeks out industrial strength rehab, Andrew?
I mean, I've got to agree with Tony on that one. Like, the rest of the show, just nothing stood out. Mm. Even if I don't like the ending to the whole Rollins and Jinder match, and even if I thought the lead-in with Elias was asinine, that's not part of the match. I guess cutting the match into its own vacuum. Sure. I guess that was, sadly, the best thing on the show tonight. How about you, Harry? What's yours?
I'm going to give it to the segment that Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas had with Kurt Angle before the barbecue, where they were kind of just talking to each other and ignoring the fact that Kurt was standing right there, despite that they were trying to get tag team title shots. And Axel's line of Kurt Angle just boned us out of a tag title match just made me laugh way harder than it really should have.
Okay.
Greg Watchriever Award for the night, Tony.
That was the Nia Jax moment for sure. Just the whole promo, the whole exhibition, and you know, raising of the HP and AP. I just nope.
Andrew?
I mean, I enjoyed the excuse I made for that, so I'm going to give it that one anyway, just because of the, you know, the Final Fantasy tutorial or whatever the hell I said. So, yes, that gets the Greg Watcher award.
I'm actually going to go with Sami Zayn's apology, and more specifically, Bobby Lashley's interaction therein. As if you made us not give a fuck enough about this whole storyline last week, you managed to double down tonight and make us give even less of a fuck. Bravo.
Mm-hmm.
This should be fun. Tony, scale of 1 to 10.
I'm going to go with a hard 4. I have requests from certain people to rake it a 2, but I feel like what bothered me the most about tonight is that I wasn't angry. And what that means to me is that they're losing my emotional tie to the show. They're losing that all-powerful fandom and reasoning for us coming back, to the point where Raw will eventually become a chore and a job as opposed to a loved pastime and escape from reality. And that scares me, because typically we're angry, or at least I'm angry, like, man, this was shitty. That means that I care. That means that I want it to be better. Today, I was just like, well, I mean, this is it. We got Greg Watry in the writer circle. We got Michael Cole chuckling at everything. Like, we're not, this is not changing anytime soon. So I guess I'll be here next week. You know, like that's why I'm giving it a 4. And again, you know, on any other week, I'd say it's a 4, and I'd give you like 100 reasons why in a very, very, you know, angry and aggravated tone. But tonight, it's just an unfortunate 4. An unfortunate ranking.
Real quick, Tony, the same friend that told you to give it a 2 just told me to give it a 2, and then added the line of Michael Cole needs friends and a personality and a kiss from a moving truck.
True.
Andrew, scale of 1 to 10.
I'm going to go 3. It's not quite your 2 request, but it's for the same answers, reasons, I don't know, just laissez-faire, indifference, whatever you want to call it, of that, you know, that Tony brought up. Just I'm happy that Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Finals and Game 7 of the Western Finals were on, because it gave me something to flip to, and then there were moments I forgot to flip back because I forgot what I was watching, because that's how forgettable and boring and just uninteresting this entire show was.
If it makes you feel any better, Andrew, the creative staff forgot they had a show tonight too.
It makes me happy, yeah. Internally that Andrew used laissez-faire in a sentence. I'm smiling now.
Not only did he use it in a sentence, he used it correctly as well.
Yeah, well, you know, let things be.
My edumacation paid off a little okay, thank you.
You know what? Fuck it. This one's for you, Jimmy C. I'm giving it a 2.
I like how we went progressively lower, too. That was nice.
Well, it averages out to about a 3, which is probably where I would personally clock it. So fuck it, why not just give it a 2 and call it a day? Oh, boy. This was everything that's usually wrong with a holiday episode of Monday Night Raw wrapped up into one gigantic three-hour-long ball of garbage.
Yep.
Who's your MVP for tonight, Tony? Good luck finding one.
Sasha Banks' forehead, motherfucker.
I was just about to take a drink of pop when you said that. I'm so glad I waited. God damn you. I'm assuming that's going to be Tony's real answer, so Andrew?
I'm going to go with Kevin Durant.
Nice.
I'm going to give it to Roman Reigns, actually, because he was smart enough to stay away from this horse shit of an episode.
You would have made it worse.
Oh, shut up. At least the crowd would have reacted.
Oh, boy. Okay. Good to be back, everybody.
Yeah,
this is an interesting show for us all to get back together on.
Glad to have
you
back,
to be
Gary.
Up for... Thanks, Tony. I missed you bastards. I won't want to admit it, but I did. And for the record, my experiences into the other world of independent wrestling was quite nice. I actually got to work the shows for IWA Mid-South that I was out of town for. I was the ring announcer. You can pick up those shows and hear my melodic tones as the ring announcer for the IWA Mid-South King of the Death matches, available on smartmarkvideo.com. Show.
Yeah, JoJo Broadhurst. Whoa, get it.
So, for the third man, Andrew Ballas, and the Down Since Day One co-host, fuck you, Tony Acero. I'm Harry Broadhurst, thanking you for listening to the May 28th edition of the Raw Reaction. We promise to try to do better next week. We make no guarantees, but we promise to try. Tell me, get your life and get us out of here.
Deuces, bitches.
For better or worse, this has been the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Join us online at www.thechairshot.com. And make sure you join us again back here at our normal start time next week, 11:30 p.m. on Mondays, here for the Chairshot Radio's Raw Reaction. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great weekend.